The Honest Wargamer, an honest and independent show run by gamers for gamers. We bring you the latest in critical meta discussions, zany list tech, and deep dive discussions about the hobby as a whole. We are supported by our fantastic patrons and Twitch subscribers. If you'd like to support us and join the team, that would be awesome. Don't forget all you hydro homies, stay hydrated. Now get yourself comfy. Rob is now here for today's episode of Stream Streak.
Gamer, I am your host, Rob. This is the 40K Adjacent Show with Crusader Val and Deathwing Falcon. Welcome to the show. Our special guest today is Alanis Morissette. Can we all give it up for Alanis?
Thank you, India.
You, I don't know. That's how that goes, right?
I went with some of her later works. Pete went
with
the original.
You did. You went with what? Naked on a Subway, Alanis Morissette.
You went with Going Down on Dave Coulier, Alanis Morissette.
Listen, the only way I would do it.
Can I tell you my favorite Alanis Morissette is an MTV skit with Jay and Silent Bob, where Jay tells the story of him and Alanis Morissette falling deeply, deeply in love. And then unfortunately the record company pays him money. You might be able to find this on YouTube, it's quite hard to find. Pays him money to break up with her because it's affecting her music. She then makes that really somber music after, which is really good for the record label. And then Silent Bob listens the entire time and he's in tears because, as we know, Silent Bob is really a sweetheart. Like, he's in tears. Jay hands him his handkerchief, and Silent Bob is wiping all the tears away, and then he goes, "Coochie coochie goo, you just used my wankerchief." It's an entire story just for that gag, and it's one of my favorite skits of all time because Alanis Morissette's in it. Like, it's a whole thing.
Of course she is. Course
she anyway, is. Hello, gentlemen. How are you both?
Val, how are you? Things, or was she at one point an item with Ryan Reynolds?
Yes.
Yes, she was. They were married for like a month and a half or something.
All right. All right.
Okay. Ryan Reynolds also Canadian, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Have you guys got his gin?
Goddamn national treasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a babe. Have you got his gin? That's a thing, isn't it?
It is. He did. His viral marketing continues to do well, I see.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he sold that company and is still the face of it. So he's doing pretty good.
That son of a bitch.
Of three bitches.
Yeah, I'm going to have to clarify. We are not sponsored by Ryan Reynolds or his gin.
we are sponsored by his gin, a.k.a. a magic genie that he has.
Mm. In a lamp.
With
that
a
came
D.
up last night.
G-I-N.
Yeah.
Can I say hello to the Twitch chat? I'm being too fast this morning. I'm going to slow myself down. Hello, everyone, to the Twitch chat. Hope you're well.
Let the rest of us keep up with you, Robbie.
No, I'm going to slow it down. You guys are better. Like, my pace is too quick. I'm going to be slower. Hello, Val. How are you?
Better.
Better.
Better get a bucket.
I'm just going to skip you straight away. Falcon, how are you?
I'm good. Living my dream.
Good. What is your dream?
To sit here at 4:30 in the morning and evaluate my life while I wait for a Skype call. Mm-hmm. I just experienced it 45 minutes ago. Okay. So I don't have anything left to live for, I don't think.
Maybe the Twitch chat.
Pretty dark.
Thought about that?
I guess, you know, maybe. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
I do enjoy both of your relationship with the Twitch chat because sometimes it's deeply involved and sometimes you just tell them to shut up. Like, I was thinking.
Really depends on what they're talking about, so.
Yeah.
I forget that sometimes we're on the internet and that this will be saved for all time.
That's very true. Very, very true. All right, I want to ask you both how you both are, but I've got a burning question that I need to ask.
Is it about your pee again?
No, that's smelly. The real question is, question for me is, and mainly Pete, you might know, but Val, you're pretty into it. You know, so the Space Marine books, specifically the non-core codex stuff. So, mm-hmm. like, when you go to Space Wolves, is mm-hmm. there, like, I know there are successor chapters in Space Wolves, but are they named enough that they've got their own warlord traits or anything like that? Okay.
Negative.
Okay.
You can pick whichever ones. The only examples right now of successor chapters where you have to the only one is Flesh Terrors, I believe, where they have their own warlord traits and such that you have to pick. Well, I guess in Crimson Fists and Black Templars, and now Silver Templars.
Silver Templars.
So what are they found in?
Silver Templars is in a White Dwarf.
Okay, but they're not in a Codex, right?
They are not.
I never renewed my subscription. They do have their own, 6 months ago.
They do have a new chapter that is, I mean, it's like a stratagem and a warlord trait and a chapter tactic, I believe. Like, they don't get a lot, but
so
they do exist.
So specifically, Flesh Terrors is the only one.
Yeah, not counting. Well, no, in Crimson Fists, because they're inside the Imperial Fists book.
So only two, but Crimson Imperial. No, oh, sorry, Crimson Fists have been in them for a while. But I feel like the Flesh Terrors in the Blood Angels is fairly new.
Kind of. I mean, Gabriel Seth has been around for like a good while as a model, and they've always kind of given them like a little bit of a, oh yeah, there's Flesh Terrors. They exist because we made this dude. But that's been about the extent of it.
But they've been fleshed out recently. Is that correct?
Yeah. More recently, yes. In 8th, they had some rules with Blood of Baal that made them interesting but not great. And now with the Blood Angels book, they actually, I think, are relatively legit. They're a fun little murder army.
Well, this is really fun because I'm glad that's the answer. So then my follow-up question is, does anyone know who is the author for the Flesh Terrors narrative books from Black Library?
Isn't it Andy Smiley?
Correct. Thank you very much, Pete. And then final follow-up question, who is the head of marketing for Games Workshop?
Andy Smiley?
Correct.
Homeless man? Also correct.
Also correct.
And this is where I was getting tonight.
On an adjacent note, Blood Angel dice. Guys, these are nice dice.
You like them?
I mean, the logo's on the 6, and they are just fucking dice. They're great.
Is there a skull on the 1?
No. It's just they're all just blood drops. So the pips are just drops of blood on a black dice. These are both aesthetically pleasing and functional.
And they've sold out in about 3.5 minutes.
As they do, but... Round of applause, G-Dubs, Mr. Smiley. You've outdone yourself.
It's because I was watching some Blood Angels content this morning, and then they were like, here's loads of content on the Flesh Terrors. I was like, when has there been a book where it's like, they've got their own... So I know, and obviously Crimson Fists, if anyone isn't aware, is the homebrew chapter of the head of 40K. His name is... I forget his name. The rules guy, whatever his name
Sam
is.
Samwise Gamgee.
Nailed it. But I just Crudacci? I just oh, that's it. Robin Crudence, that's his name, isn't it? But I was just like, oh, this is a nice bit of nepotism in here. This is fun. I enjoyed this, like, because sometimes you ask yourself the question, like, if you were not in the know, you'd just be like, that's cool, the Flesh Terror's in it, that's kind of cool. But now you're in the know, you're like, I know why that's there, and that's quite fascinating to see its inclusion, if that makes sense.
But yeah. Rob, all of this stuff is just made up by a bunch of guys, you know? Like,
but I mean, so is like our financial sector.
Money, money is a figment of our imagination.
Money is made up.
I would just like to shout out that if you were looking to get the Supplement de Codex Blood Angels, it's temporarily sold out online, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, the French love their Blood Angels.
Sorry.
Or
they say en français, je suis désolé.
Mm-hmm. They do say that.
Right, so gentlemen, how are you both? What's going on in the world of 40K right now?
You know what we did, Rob?
Yeah, tell me.
Pete, tell the people.
Oh, I have to tell you. Val and I started a game of TTS. We decided to join the 21st millennium in COVID 40K play, and... Yeah, we're doing
that. How
did
it go?
I mean, we're not done.
We're coming into round two. We're coming into the second turn. You can save it, Rob. We could play this game for like 6 months.
You can.
So Val ghosted me pretty hard. yesterday, and the day before. Like, he's been just been, he's been like, what's it called? The shadow from those old like 30s comics.
No, I do that thing where I say I'll see you at 9 and I show up at 11. It's just pretty standard operating procedure.
Yeah, and he messages me and he's like, oh yeah, I forgot we were going to do something. I was buying a chair. And it's like, oh, like a special chair? No, just like a, just was searching the internet for a chair. Any chair, really.
You're not, this is uncomfortable. It's not ergonomic.
Did you get a Herman Meyer?
Have you guys considered getting like a Secret Labs chair that feel that fits in with your aesthetic, Val, quite heavily?
Secret Labs?
Yeah, it's the cool guy streaming chair. Like, if you're like a cool guy streamer, you have a Secret Labs chair.
Oh, suck my D. Those things are gut. I'd get a divorce if my wife saw one of those chairs in here. Kidding me? $520?
In Canadian bucks?
Yes, that is Canada bucks.
The Games Workshop are missing the trick because a lot of companies are licensing Secret Lab chairs, so like a World of Warcraft chair, etc. I really do feel they're missing the trick not doing a range of 40K chairs.
Yeah, one that's just made of people's skin.
Real leather texture. I mean, isn't leather just people's skin?
Just looking at this chair, I can just smell that like gasoline direct from China smell.
Good smell. Mm-hmm. Like, really good smell. The power of imprisonment. That's what you're smelling.
Hey.
So what armies did you both use? Which armies did you both use?
Rob, second dumbest question you've asked today.
Okay. Both use Marines.
I brought the new Blood Angels because I wanted to give them a go. I'd played my first TTS game the day before against a fellow Blood Angel player using my Blood Angels, so that was good. And then Val brought his Orc boys with a big boy in the middle.
Gargothunk in the house.
How did Gargle Stomper? So have you both had a turn so far?
Oh yeah.
Okay, and how did you find the mechanics of using TTS?
I mostly got it now. There's a couple little things, but it's playing my first game with my buddy Owen Bissell was very helpful in teaching me some of the crazier mechanics, so I don't toss my models all over the place like a lunatic when I play, and that has made it a much more enjoyable experience.
Well, speaking of ghosting, I can't remember who ghosted who last week, but I was supposed to learn from Rob on Wednesday.
I did have a leak. So I cleaned a gutter. I cleaned a gutter last week, which was very like so
outside?
Adult of me. Yeah, outside on my roof. It was leaking through into my bathroom. So I had, which was like, you know, kind of fine.
And were like, you elbow deep in your gutter, and were you like, you know what? I'm gonna ask for a fridge. You know, this is bullshit.
Speaking of the fridge, I actually have to go in a very small moment, but you guys could stay. I reckon I can do the job and come back.
Did you get called up?
Like, I got the notification right here.
Oh no. Don't miss that fridge, man.
So I don't want to
you could join the early 20th century. Go get that fridge.
But you guys can stay if you want.
I mean, we will.
Is it an ice box? Tell me it's an ice box.
I honestly don't know what it is. I didn't even order it myself.
Like, I don't know.
Pete,
is this like a British fridge? Like, is there a difference?
Yeah, what silly word do the Brits have for a fridge?
Fridge, probably a freezer.
Probably like a bagonk.
Hey, you got the Coolidge.
Yeah, the Coolidge, yes.
I'm going to wait till the phone call comes, and then I'll run. That's the plan.
It's really close, right? Isn't it? Are you like next door now? Yeah, you're not.
Yeah, basically.
Easy just commute. Easy commute.
8-minute run.
Do you have a cartoon Brontosaurus in front of the studio that you can slide down when you're done your shift at the end of the day?
I wish. Mainly, nope. None of that. I mean, I wish you could.
Brontosauruses don't exist.
Right, anyway. What were you guys saying? TTS, did you enjoy
birds
it?
Aren't real.
Did you enjoy that? Did you, when you rolled the first couple of dice, how were your feelings? Were you like, well, we're back into it?
Value.
Pete actually the TTC, Toronto Transit Commission, the TTS Discord has that like big package of stuff. And Pete showed me there's this like awesome map someone's made. I don't know who, but it has like this awesome dice rolling area. So like rolling it has essentially the old Games Workshop dice rolling app in tabletop simulator form. And it's got all kinds of features that I didn't even realize were there that Peter showed me how to use. It was fantastic. And also, every now and again, you do the little clickety-clack when you want that sensation of, like, a big dice roll. You throw it. And, in fact, the last dice roll of the game, I think, was Pete doing that for one of his Sanguinary Guard. Rolled a one. Failed it. Yep. Sucker.
Rolled a one. Took a single wound.
I want to ask you so many questions, but I have to go. You guys are now in charge with the Twitch chat.
Okay.
I apologize about this. 7:30 a.m. For everyone at home, ordered a fridge. It was to come sometime between 7:30 a.m. and 9 p.m., and it chose to come at 12:29. I don't know what else. This is the way. So I'll be back if you guys need me. Won't be long. Good luck. You guys okay with this?
Yeah, whatever. We'll just probably sit here quietly and
ignore the chat.
Back our lips.
Maybe we'll browse the internet. This is kind of what we're reading.
Good luck.
Thanks, Rob. Man,
I don't even know what to do with this kind of power.
Obviously, we talk shit about Rob the whole time.
Yeah,
okay,
what a dick.
So, chat. Let's hear. What's your favorite thing about Rob's face? Anyone believe the fridge story? I do believe that Rob doesn't have a fridge. I don't know about you guys.
I do believe that. Yeah.
To me, that's probably the most believable thing I've heard this morning. Hey, you guys got Weird Al? Yeah, we have Weird Al. Weird Al used to, Canada has a version of MTV called Much Music. And every summer, Pete, you remember this? Weird Al used to take over Much Music.
Yeah. For a day or two. Yeah. I remember when, what was it? Batman. Cause he did, when U2 did their Batman song. I don't remember. Frank, what was it?
You think it was a Batman song?
Yeah, they
did. Batman soundtrack?
Yeah, I think it was Returns, maybe, or maybe it was Forever. But I remember because he did like a parody thing on the while I was at the dentist. This is all coming back to me. You're like causing flashbacks to like a terrible time in my life, but
now,
I love it.
Apparently, Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me was on, by the looks of it, the Batman and Robin soundtrack.
Oh,
no,
maybe
Batman
that's what
Forever
it was.
Soundtrack.
Batman Forever. That makes, but yeah, Batman Forever, where I got my nice McDonald's mug that I still own. My parents own it now.
Of course. But it was like all like molded plastic with the Riddler on it.
Yeah. Or well, they had different ones. They had like four that you could collect if you bought a hero sandwich, which was just a like a cheeseburger, but
all right.
Sub bun.
I'm going to do a little Rob Austin. It's going to be a show here. Top three bad Batman movies.
Well, number one would have to be. I know you're supposed
sock.
To.
Sorry, there's an Ed the Sock reference in chat. Go ahead.
Not Ed the Sock. I mean, there are Canadians in the chat.
Top three bad Batman.
Well, number one worst Batman movie has to be Batman and Robin. They did say that it ruined the franchise. They did a pretty good job of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I think everyone involved, I think, realized they made it the bad.
Fucking Electric Circus reference. Stop it, Tomb King Tristan.
I mean, Tomb King Tristan lives in like Prince Edward Island. So he knows as much music because that's all they have.
The Rhode Island of Canada.
They have Pogie Beach and much music.
Don't forget Red Soil and Potatoes.
Yeah, and Anna Green Gables.
Someday, maybe you should tell the Anna Green Gables. All right.
What, the one where I was kicked off of, well, almost kicked off of Prince Edward Island because we caused too much of a ruckus at 7:30 at night?
Oh, no. I believe you used the term in front of some tourists that was perhaps inappropriate that you didn't realize was inappropriate.
Oh, no, that was in Fundy. Yeah, that was.
Oh, it's Bay of Fundy. Okay.
Yeah, that was when I toured, when I was a tour guide in Fundy.
Inside joke. On the show. Okay, so I'm going to say Batman and Robin.
Number one.
Cool it. I'm just going to throw out there. I mean, that to me would be a solid two.
Like out of 10? Out of
five? The top three worst Batman movies?
I'd say that's
you have
a two.
It as a two. It's a one for me. I don't think you can get worse.
Number one, I think we'll leave Park number one because I think okay. Number one's probably your number two. Okay. So what's your number three?
Number three Batman movie. Probably The Dark Knight Rises, the third in the Nolan trilogy. Didn't do it for me.
Huh. Yeah, it was bad. Thank you. Thank you.
Didn't do it for me.
That provides me a lot of validation. I don't know if it's as bad as Batman Forever.
Batman Forever had Jim Carrey in it. And Val Kilmer.
Do you know how much Jim Carrey's makeup, which was basically just a bad haircut and a lot of like white. It was like 8 hours of makeup. Remember before CGI when actors used to have to do like a friggin' day of makeup and then.
Yep. And now they just put like light bulbs on their nose and they're like, here you go, Rudolph.
Just figure it out in post.
Figure it out.
Can you Photoshop the cigarette out of my mouth? Thank you. I was going to say number one worst Batman movie of all time has got to be Batman: The Movie starring Adam West.
No.
So brutal. Okay,
you have to go watch that again.
Well, Batman and Robin is clearly an homage to Batman: The Movie, and I think don't you ever talk bad about Val Kilmer. Thank you, Ty Winning. You're right. Val Kilmer, by the way, I don't know if you guys have read the very long form interview he did with, was that the New Yorker?
I think it was.
Very, very long interview. Val Kilmer had throat cancer. I don't think he can talk anymore. Yeah,
he went through a bad time. He gained all that weight, lost it all again, had throat cancer, probably helped lose the weight that way. Bad places, though. Bad places. But, I mean, he was in one of the most underrated movies of all time.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
I guess so, two of the most underrated movies of all time. MacGruber.
MacGruber.
Yeah.
Now, interesting that you bring up MacGruber because my sister loves MacGruber. Heat, by the way. Also, yes, Heat. Do you think Heat stand up?
I don't know. I saw Heat when it came out because, I mean, it was such a big deal. Pacino, De Niro, right? That was Heat.
Yeah, that was like the big, like, that was the generational Pacino, De Niro moment.
Yeah.
So Ziggy 1982 says Heat still brilliant.
Good. I don't think that one was underrated because if you lived in that time, it was like all over everything.
Is Heat before Heat is past? Like Heat is definitely in the Al Pacino only shouts phase of his career, right? Like he's not really he's still not really acting at that point.
No, he's just yelling like a lot.
Post Scent of a Woman, just yelling.
It's like the Bill Hader Al Pacino all the time.
That is an excellent Al Pacino.
Yeah, he does the best Al Pacino.
I mean, that's the Al Pacino that Alanis Morissette fell for all those years ago.
Yeah.
Fun trivia fact, the Scent of a Woman that Al Pacino is talking about is, in fact, a very young Alanis Morissette.
Not like this. Not like this. Not like this patch.
Getting back to Batman: The Movie. Someone said here that it was intentionally a parody. Well, so was Batman and Robin, for the record. I'm pretty sure Joel Schumacher did that on purpose. You can't make something that stupid accident.
I don't know.
I mean, it's like we're very intentional with how dumb we are on the show. And I feel like that is because we were so inspired by Joel Schumacher himself.
Yes. But in Batman: The Movie, I mean, like the villains turn people into powder.
Well, I mean, I think the bat spray, the bat. Oh, how does it work? The bat shark.
Bat shark repellent. Yeah.
Bat shark spray repellent. Something like that.
Yeah.
That's one of the dumbest moments of all time. Also, when he does they're in the bat copter and he climbs three rungs down the ladder and then Burt Reynolds what's his name? Burt. What's
Robin Reynolds?
No, I know, but it's Burt something. Burt Ward. Burt Ward does he like hooks his legs dramatically after climbing down three rungs and like hangs upside down four rungs. Mm-hmm. I don't even think he's at the bottom of the ladder when he does this. and then he explodes the shark with the bad shark repellent.
Yeah, and, because he was a circus performer, Val. So he doesn't need the whole ladder.
He should go back to the circus. No one can get a fridge that quickly, Rob. I think the chat was calling BS, and I'm with them right now.
I sent you a picture, if you want.
This guy, he's out of breath. He's so. Did you carry it up the stairs?
No, I just put it in like the hallway, and then.
All right. Okay. Actually, now that he's desperate and gasping for breath, stay hydrated, everyone. This is why you stay hydrated, guys. In case a fridge comes in the middle of your show.
We were just counting down.
Atlantis hasn't gone yet either. But mm-hmm. Top three worst Batman movies. Go, Rob.
Oh, whatever the most recent one was.
Good one. Okay,
that was Bane.
That was Pete's third. I didn't know this was a popular opinion. I hated that film myself. Continuing.
Nothing happens in it. It's just awful.
Yep. I agreed on all the fronts.
I used to love Dark Knight, but I'm now like deeply, deeply opposed to the entire Batman franchise in all ways. So all of them.
Wow. It's a proletarian thing, isn't it?
It is. Originally, I was like, yeah, cool. Like, Batman's awesome. But then actually, you know, someone the other day was like, why doesn't Bruce Wayne use the billions he spent on researching a Batmobile to just, like, you know, do some, like, fucking community programs?
Yeah. He does that.
Wait, does he?
Also yeah, I just want to point out that
he's a philanthropist.
I want to point out that
philanderer.
Literally every single Batman villain is mentally ill. They all escape a psychiatric prison.
Yeah.
They're just mentally ill people that he just beats the living shit out of all the time.
Well, he sponsors an orphanage, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does that too.
Just the, like, real is, suffer.
The real question is with like a billionaire philanthropist dedicated to only one city, like a billionaire could probably solve the problems of several cities, but with a billionaire philanthropist dealing with only one city, why is the crime still so rampant?
Well, I mean, you just ask Buffalo.
That's a philosophical question.
They've got the Pagula family, and the Pagulas got rich on that fracking money. But I mean, Buffalo's improved, but I mean, has it really improved? I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that is a question, Rob, that they have constantly tried to answer in all forms of Batman media. Why are there so many supervillains? Is it because Batman exists that the villains exist? It's a good question. Something to ponder someday.
Are you
discussing?
Is that you trying to defund the police? Escalation? Are you saying if we defund the police, there'll be no crime?
What? No. I mean, I think that if you defund Batman, there'd be less psychopaths with a bunch of money. But then you think about people like Oswald Cobblepot, who was always a psychopath, and he existed pre-Bruce Wayne. You just didn't know about it because there was no Batman to unearth the seedy underbelly. It's almost like Pizzagate all over again, but in Gotham City.
By the way, chat getting a little testy about us dissecting Batman. Also, I want to throw out a little thing here. Is there something interesting about when Batman is, you know, ascendant in popular culture versus when, like, something like a Superman or a Marvel is ascendant in popular culture? I would point out that Batman returned to the screen during the Bush administration, a dark time.
Dark time, yep.
A dark time desperation and moral depravity. And
Batman
Returns
was during the first Bush administration.
Sure was. Actually, both of the Keaton Batmans came out of the Reagan and Bush administrations, precursors, if you will, to the Bush administration that we always refer to, or as Alanis likes to think of it, the best time of her life.
when she was really firing on all cylinders during that point.
Alanis is, I mean, her glory years obviously are the Clinton administration, like most of us. But I don't know. I do think that is interesting when the Batman idea is popular. Perhaps it's correlative a bit to a desperate moment in society.
Well, that's a current philosophy, isn't it? Because of the post 9/11 situation, psychologically, or like you know, is the reason and gave rise to superhero movies, because the concept that no single man could obviously fight against such terrible horror, and therefore you need like a superhuman who's able to defeat, you know, insert quote bad guys whenever there is a situation, I think, is a kind of like general feel. But I don't think that's the case, because I feel like there was already like a significant rise in popularity for sci-fi and all of those things, you know, like if you take Games Workshop, to I think a pretty good example, you know, like 30 years ago that they started and that like they got a whole bunch of kids into it, and now they're really reaping the reward of all of those children turning into adults with expendable income. I feel like the same is true probably for Marvel. Those movies, those comics and early TV franchises movies 30 years ago now really reaping the reward.
It's a demographic bubble. It's like clearly like a bunch of quarter life, midlife crises. I mean, in my case, I couldn't agree with you more there, Rob. This is like literally just the millennials returning to their roots. It's like how when we were little kids, every movie was like really nostalgic about hippies and stuff.
There are actual like science papers written on this topic.
We should read those before we talk about them, I think.
Yeah. There's a really good one. Really good one called Bush's America and the Return of Cold War Science Fiction.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Okay.
Anyway.
I feel like science fiction now is too hard to grasp. Like, what are the... Because I've been watching... I don't know if anyone else has been watching Star Trek Discovery. Great TV series.
Sounds bad.
Really enjoying it.
Is it good? Because I've only heard Trekkies liking it, which says to me, probably not good.
Wow. I mean, wow. Listen, like, the Star Trek franchise is so much more interesting, can I just say, than the Star Wars franchise, for a couple of specific reasons. Number one, you've got the kind of proto-series of films, which are hilarious. They're just various... If you actually watch the original set of Star Trek films, you see what drug was popular at the time on set.
So it's like, that's why 40-year-old Bill Shatner is just so sweaty all the time.
Well, that's in one of them. In one of them, he's very relaxed and it's like very high-minded. Like there's LSD, there's coke, there's like they go through that whole. So that's an exciting time generally to watch through those. And then as you got into the later ones, they kind of like they took a turn. I don't know. Like I think it's quite an interesting. Anyway, the point is they're trying to like picture this future sci-fi, and like it's quite hard because, you know, future sci-fi will just be like they read your brain and make everything happen, right? So how can you write future sci-fi now? Like when you were like Orson Welles, it's like cool, maybe things will fly. You're like, oh, calm down. Like,
oh, whoa, Ty Winning here just intrigued me with his quote solid TNG vibes. Color me intrigued.
But I'm actually an original series fan. I'm not a TNT guy.
Okay, so you just said Batman's problematic and you're an original Star Trek series guy?
Yeah, who doesn't like original series? Listen, that's the space I want. I know it's not okay, but you know, you punch an alien, you kiss a bird, you slap her on the ass and you say, let's go fast. Yeah? But that's a future that we could all enjoy.
Shouldn't kiss birds. That's how we end up with stuff like COVID.
Oh,
birds. That's right. COVID is the fault of William Shatner in the 60s making out beds.
Okay.
Beds.
Someone wanted 40K less adjacency.
So I was actually going to ask the chat to just sort that person out. But yeah, I think Rob attempted to make a very adjacent 40K reference, perhaps in a futile attempt to bring us on track a little bit. And Alanis Moore said, not today, said she. I don't know. What do you want to talk about? We were doing TTS, and yeah, I almost wore that shirt this morning, Rob. We would have been twins. We would have been twinnies.
Thanks, buddy. Great t-shirt. Finger gun. So TTS, my question to you both, I know you've had a very limited experience with it, but there are Falcon and Val as people who are, according to MetaWatch at least, know something about tournaments. The question, you guys obviously are conscious of it. How would you feel about the veracity of TTS events and the results coming out of TTS events?
Oh, shit. Pete? That's definitely a Pete question. I'll just sit here and listen.
I mean, just like with any kind of event, I mean, I will track it if the data's good. I've kind of blind-eyed it a little bit. We did cover it a little bit on 40K Stat Center for a few reasons, mostly because I didn't think it would be a thing we'd have to continue to do for a year. Also, Tactical Tortoise did implement a few home rules in his events, or house rules in his events that aren't in the core rulebook. So I would have to, just like I do with regular tournaments, have to go through all of them, see if they applied any house rules, see if that changes how the game's played, et cetera, and move from there. But I don't see anything wrong with the veracity of the event as long as there's some way to track that it happened. So
I would say this is actually the Tactical Tortoise. This is an interesting YouTube character in his own right. But nonetheless, when he started getting into this whole TTS thing, he got really excited. And
is that how he talks?
You've never listened to Tactical? Yes. He actually kind of literally talks that way. But
Never in my life.
He has a very presenter voice. And he brings the energy. Anyway, I actually really like the guy. Nonetheless, he, much like you, Rob, when he sort of started trying to encourage like some TTS content for his YouTuber channel, he used it as an opportunity to create a format, I think, that he thought might be a little bit more engaging for an audience, which I thought was kind of neat. And I encourage people to do that wherever they can, because I don't know, I think there's a great opportunity to sort of make TTS its own thing. Do they play the same missions, though, do they, or do they not?
It depends if you're talking about his like kill team-esque variant that they just started, or the, or if they, you mean like the 2000 pods. The 2000 pods are the same. They use the same core rulebook.
Well, so we're doing a weekend. Well, not a weekend. So we're doing a tournament coverage day on Sunday. So at like maybe our third or fourth Age Sigmar event that we're going to do actual commentary from, for a TTS event. So
sweet.
So I've got some commentators booked in. It's a one dayer. Owen has organized like six of these now, and I think we've covered a couple of them, which has been fun. But we were kind of doing it during also moving venues, so like we're a little bit more like tech competent now, like all the stuff set up in like situ, so it should be like a little bit easier to produce, which is fun. But like so that's, also, that's like, it. Go on.
It'd just be fun, like just think of like how presentation wise like if you were to get slick with it, like you have free movement of the camera. You don't have players to look at. I don't know if they bring a video feed in, or maybe someone like Slackjawed staring at their screen. But like I just like presentation wise, you can move the camera around wherever you want. You can zoom in on shit. You can, I don't know. Seems like it'll be fun.
It is fun. But as a commentator, so that like jumping between multiple tables, which I do think is the future for doing coverage anyway, is like slightly harder. Which might be something we try and do over the weekend as well. The presentation of the tables, while interesting...
Rob, you're freaking me out. You all right over there?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I just ran, like, real fast.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
But then I had to, like, be... But then, you know, when a delivery guy comes and you have to kind of be like a bloke, it was like, yeah, all right, mate. He's like, yeah. He's like, fridge in here. He's like, yeah, get it in, son. I was like, cracking COVID, eh? He's like, oh, no. He's like, I'll be off.
And he just sort of tosses it, just like fucking like Jazzy Jeff's the fridge in your apartment.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, but the point was, is I still think it does lack something in presentation. Maybe if you like tried to create like a really nice, pretty board, you would you could potentially do it. And you know, if you got all the right assets, and it does look cool functionally, I do think it misses maybe like that drama. But then you know, oftentimes events and we're criminals for this, like in the past when we didn't have all the tech, you sometimes would just have a top-down camera, so it's better than that. I don't know what it is. I think there's the energy of the event as well that's like is to a degree lacking. It's exciting, I guess, just not, which is an interesting kind of like correlation with esports. Like esports events, even though you could just have studio A, studio B, and like the main studio and all the feeds are fed in, they have a live studio audience. They put them in front of people at an event, even though everything is then in front of a screen. And I don't know what you guys think about that. You got any thoughts?
Here we are talking about the meta of presenting 40K again. But
Shit.
It's okay. This is like our number one actual topic on the show. I would just very quickly say that conversely to that, I have found it fascinating that in the age of COVID, how most of the major sports teams have not skipped a friggin' beat. So like most sports leagues have, I was just going to say most sports leagues, like the NFL, for example, if it wasn't for the fact that everyone has COVID and they have to like cancel games all the time. If you just tuned in and watched football, you wouldn't know there was a pandemic going on. And literally all they've done is add like a little bit of a soundtrack in the back and they never pan up to the crowd and like, boom, you're good. So there are probably ways to like fake it.
Have you seen what the WWE has done with their like little stadium that they set up with like 100 big screen TVs that fans can essentially pay to be on?
No, the NBA did that too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Awesome. It's actually quite the interesting setup because now like I don't watch it anymore. I used to, you know, whatever 10, 20 years ago. But like YouTube did its algorithm thing and was like, here, you need to watch this thing right now. And so I clicked it and it was like a recent matchup. And it was actually very interesting, like how they have it all set up with the intros. Cause when the wrestlers come down, like it'll cut between the fans to their intro on all of the screens. And it actually has a really interesting feel to it. It did feel like very, very futuristic to me. Like, this is the way we just do things now.
I mean, you wonder if things like that will like stay in place in the future, like ultimately, and how much that's. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because obviously, ours is an analog game, and we are, as an audience, and also probably as a group, people who are by nature, we've had computer games at our disposal for our entire lives, and yet we've eschewed them to a degree. Not saying that we don't all play them as well, but there's been a certain element of like, I want this tactile, physical game where I go places. To be the thing that I'm most interested in, or at least like aggressively so I feel like that there's definitely a demographic kind of like weakness to us as a group that like is always going to sometimes like maybe avoid TTS to a degree, although it's an excellent tool. The agency mod stuff I've seen has been brilliant. One of the things also I wanted to ask as well is it's produced a different meta. Sorry, go on.
I was just as a point to that, like you probably wouldn't have Magic Online without originally having Magic. Like, why would you play a card game in digital form when you could have a fucking like when you could have Warhammer Online, right? Like, or sorry, when you could have World of Warcraft or whatever. But because people have that foundation in the physical game, and this is what's interesting about translating it to TTS for me. And like I've done it once, but it felt like playing Warhammer against my friend. And also, it's a friend who I just never get to see. I've met Pete in the flesh twice. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was really neat to play a game of Warhammer against Pete because I've literally never had the opportunity. And it felt like 40K to me. But if I didn't have that original tactile experience, it would be stupid. But because I do have that original tactile experience, it's great. And I suspect because people could observe Pete and I playing that game, and maybe they're aware of the game that they couldn't afford, or like, shit, I don't want to paint all those models, or whatever reason people don't play 40K, they might be like, oh, now I can try it in this virtual way. So I think like it's different. It's different for sure. But again, it's just a little Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. Question, is there a different meta? Falcon, like, have you seen any different metas? Neil in the chat, big shout out, Neil. I haven't chatted you in a while. Hope you're well. Hope little one's well. Have you seen a different meta?
So it's very interesting. There is and there isn't. I think when you get to the core, if you look at like when an event comes out and you have your like what the general roster is, it's very different because people can play whatever they want. But once you get to those top tables, most of the time it's everything that you expect. Like I haven't seen a top table list super shock me compared to what was being done live. This last weekend they did the finals of one of the tactical tortoise pods, and it was kind of your standard Harlequin list into Sisters of Battle, which is what I would have expected as the two top armies in the game right now, post Space Marine Codex.
How's the Stampa been doing?
I couldn't tell you, dude. I don't watch everything. The overall meta is slightly different, but once you get to like the T-Whip style of, inside of things, there's been no shockers. In fact, when I first started watching TTS, I would say they were ahead of the curve just by a little bit, because there is no hobby lag to get the models where they need to go, et cetera. They can just be like, well, this sounds good, let's test it, and you can just immediately throw it on the table, right? So it's very similar to how kind of 8th was when it was at its peak and we were having like 10 GTs a week. Where you would see the meta like adjust almost immediately because there were a few people that were able to hobby together what they like, what should be the best. TTS just does it. So,
yeah, I guess that's the thing, is that it can be just an instant shift. And I think also creates, there's actually a reference here to Magikarp Usefly, from our mate Neil Kerr. And he actually came out with if you're TTS curious, he has a wonderful video, I think, because I find the guy funny. I don't know if anyone else does, but nonetheless, I think he's hilarious. He's got a video about how to like play TTS and why you might. And a lot of it is just like, it's a good way to, for example, just test out an army that you're thinking of building and seeing if it's a very bad idea or not. It's a good way to, if you're just curious about 40K in general, to play it without having to like dive all the way in. There's all kinds of great reasons to play TTS, in addition to just being a degenerate 40K fan and needing some way to do it while you're in isolation. It has taken me, how many months now have we been doing this? 8 months? It's taken me a long time to finally get to the point where I'm like, okay, I'll do this. But now that I have, I really do enjoy it. We had a question, about Pete. Do you get any tournament stats from, quote, Spain or Russia?
I have never gotten a Russian event for results, but I have gotten Spanish results multiple times.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do they do their own stats, or like, or they're not pro in nation?
I just doubt they cover it. I couldn't tell you. Spain, I mean, we've interviewed La Voz de Oros before, and
Who actually, Neil Kerr, hosts the largest team event on the planet that we're aware of, unless Russia has a bigger one. What I was going to say, the great filter, really, I think, as far as Peter and I are concerned, is the English language. So if you're typing up your tourney results in Cyrillic, I think you're pretty much not going to exist as far as we know.
Well, that's the situation I was in yesterday. I had a bunch of results sent in from Spain, and then I was reading what I thought was the meta percentage difference as the it was actually the win percentage difference. I was like, oh, they messaged me after, and I was like, oh, sorry guys. And that is going to be a problem, right? Like, it's a multilingual game. Like, I wonder how, like, because there must be metas that exist in another language which just, you know, the English speaking language aren't privy to a degree.
Well, and that's the thing that blew my mind about the team event in Spain, which is, how many players was it? It was hundreds and hundreds of players. It was basically the second largest event behind the LVO, and so the largest team event by a good margin over the ATC, the American Team Championship. And it had existed for a number of years, and like, the English-speaking world, Warhammer world, just didn't know it existed as far as I knew. And also on top of that, La Voz de Oros is, I think, probably the biggest 40K podcast, but it's in Spanish. Like, they win actual podcast awards and stuff. Like, not really? Like, not like sci-fi themed podcast awards, like Spanish podcast awards. This is won by a 40K podcast. So, like, you know, it's just interesting that, yeah, that is a quite a big barrier for a couple of, well, actually, Pete's bilingual. I don't know why he doesn't have his finger on the pulse of the French 40K scene. But I'm a unilingual type, and I just depend on the kindness of strangers to hear about the cool stuff that's happening outside of my language.
Just a second. Nikos, how relevant are COVID tourney stats? I think COVID tourney stats are extraordinarily relevant. We have enough data that you can easily regress to mean looking at by comparing like RTTs, GT, and casual games. And you can see the correlation between them. And just from that alone, I'm probably within about a percentile confident in the results, at least up to the Space Marine Codex. The thing is, after Space Marine Codex launched, most of the world decided maybe we should stop playing games. So at that point, you have a meta that is really focused on the South. I still think the data is probably relevant, but that would be where I would hold off, is like anybody trying to say that a certain faction is excellent on GT results based off of events that only happen in the Midwest and Southern United States. But previous to that, the like 5,000 games we'd recorded, they were from all over the world. We were able to compare to about 12,000 RTT games in BCP and compare to a good 18,000 like home games. So the win rates all matched up outside of Custodes, which generally perform better in casual games than they do in competitive. Yeah, like I have no, I'm extraordinarily confident in the quote unquote COVID stats. And I actually, while I understand the trepidation in using them, I hate the fact that we do. Like that we seem to think that they are lesser.
I actually, you brought up something that I thought that was really, really cool, which was when we started getting stats beyond yours. So I guess, I don't know where they're coming from. Is that just Goonhammer counting all those beans?
Yeah. So Josh Diffie has been sending Excel sheets to myself and Goonhammer with all the results. And then the guy behind ITC Battles app has been kind of, they keep all their stats. You can actually view them yourself, but he's been exporting them out as well for us, so we can take a look. And that gives us an insight into like how casual games play, what's the big difference between casual and GT level play, etc.
Also RTTs and things. But anyway, what I was going to say is it's been interesting to me to see how, like you said, a lot of those big sort of meta stats translate. You know, there's not a lot of variance between you know, the GT scene and, you know, RTTs and home games, which shocked me, to be honest with you.
Well, would you not say that like the barrier to entry for like COVID style tournaments, but also TTS, for example, even you guys being 40K curious for a long, well, 40K serious for a long time, you know, you've only just jumped on TTS, whereas, you know, the people who were already competing at a level, flying all across the world, they either continued to do so or continued to go to events, or they did jump straight onto TTS and continued that kind of like deep pace. So I do wonder if like the more kind of like prolific end of the spectrum of players, which pretty much dominated the stats anyway pre-COVID, are still an inherent and integral part of the current kind of player base that are keeping everything motivated, which does seem to make sense, right?
Yep. And I mean, like some people have argued that there are certain players that aren't playing, so certain factions aren't getting their just go. And I would argue that in the past, the 2 years of previous data I had, singular players very rarely had a major impact on statistics. There was a brief period where Jim Vessel and TJ Lanigan kind of carried Chaos Demons. But once everybody picked up their lists, it didn't change the results because they couldn't play it the same way those two guys could. Siegler with Tau is a similar case where he maybe had like a single percentile impact on overall Tau statistics. He did cause other people to play Tau that way, but we didn't see a giant boost in Tau. Even with Siegler and Pullen, they were still like a mid 50 percentile army. Hmm. After the fact, like it's, people are still kind of held back by their capabilities in this game, right? Like the how many games they get in, etc. It's very rare, with the exception of, I would say, when Iron Hands came out and was so oppressive and was so easy to play. It's very rare for just anybody to pick up an army and just be like, I'm going to dunk on everyone.
That was
competitive play.
that was one of the most hilarious slash depressing periods of our short Stats Center run, which was us like reaching out to a GT winner and the guy being like, yeah, so hadn't played in like 5 years or whatever, but saw that there was a GT going on. So I said, what's good, bud? And they were like, Iron Hands. So I came out and I went 5-0 and I won. And it's just like, that was so many people and they were all Hoser Canadians. But yeah, that really did start happening where you just saw like people just randomly winning events. And it sucked because like up until then it was a sweet narrative to be like, yeah, man, 40K is a skill game. And then Iron Hands came along. It was like, shit.
Shit. Well, I mean, it still was a skill game. It's just, it's just the skill like was removed for a while in your effectiveness in winning. I mean, you still had to like understand rules a bit, but whatever. a bit.
I mean, that guy was probably still taking leadership checks to, like, shoot beyond the closest target. Like, he was just, like, his opponents were like, yeah, pass that leadership check. Fourth edition reference, anybody? Okay, cool, let's move along.
Not got that. Sorry, bud. Yeah.
Take off, eh?
Get that fourth edition stuff out of here, buds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the TTS thing is interesting, especially as like I think there's been waves of introductions to it, right? So wasn't there also like a tournament organized on TTS, like not just a regular tournament, sorry, but like a league, a pro league, and all that other stuff? Like,
all sorts.
For me, it's been not problematic. I just think it's taken a while to like, I don't know. I feel like it will fall by the wayside a tad when COVID is gone.
Well, I mean, it already has before, right? When things kind of went out of lockdown the first time, everybody that had been talking TTS was like, never mind, we don't need this anymore. It was still being played. There were still probably thousands of games going on, but people stopped giving a shit like immediately as soon as they were allowed to play in person.
Yeah, and I do worry about what Games Workshop will eventually do, because they have to understand that it's going to be hurting their bottom line at some point in the future.
I'm quite sure they already know. They just don't know how to handle it yet. That's probably where it's at.
What can they? What are they going to start doing? Like busting in? How can they stop it? Like what are they going to do? What are they going to do? There's nothing they can do. The only thing they could do is compete with it, and they won't do that.
I guess not. I guess, as far as I understand it, it's a lot like Battlescribe in that, like, all the information is hosted somewhere else, so there's not much you can do. But they can slap the people that make the game. Like, they're a big enough company that they can go after the game company.
Like, no, I can't. It's the people who make Tabletop Simulator have nothing to do with the content people upload on it. That's why it works. It's the same peer-to-peer stuff as always. So, like, they don't host any of the files. They don't, like, that's the building it all happens in. They're not responsible for what
they could kill the Steam Workshop part. That would be it.
And they have a few times, and then it just pops up again.
Yeah. But that's really I think the extent currently. Maybe it could get crazier, but
one sec here.
Are you guys, so a couple of things that just come out, Pete, talking 40K again, Val, I don't know if you're interested. This is the most excited since the launch of 8th and my excitement for the new app. This is the most excited I've been actually for 40K because one of my favorite factions, Death Guard, are getting a book and we've started to see some hot goss about it.
Sorry, I was going to say the Warhammer community finally put out an article about a new faction with good rules so people could get excited. We haven't really seen that since Iron Hands. I feel like they were like, let's hold off on showing good stuff for a while because people got real mad last time. It looks pretty cool. I mean, Demon Engines look to be getting a 3+ ballistic skill, which is super crazy bananas. And Possessed going to 4 attacks base, depending on the rest of their rules. That's a spicy meatball.
It is a spicy meatball. I am just going to send you guys a picture of my my 6 Mephitic Blight Haulers that I'm painting up at the minute. Very excited.
Which were already good. So, yeah.
Shit, I gapped out at the really the wrong time. I missed everything you just said.
We're just talking the new Death Guard.
They seem to have got strong
stuff from Warhammer community. Yeah. Now, I will say, based off of the profile changes, this to me really sniffs of the kind of rumored keyword changes that Death Guard are going to get, so they're no longer as chaos compatible as they used to be. So losing Heretic Astartes as a keyword to get that bubonic Astartes keyword, things like that, because otherwise, like, possessed become silly brutal if they have access to warp time still, as along with Shroud of Flies and all those other good things and a base of four attacks. So
I don't want to. I'm going to do it. I'm going to moan a little bit here. Okay. Why? Like, I don't like it. It really annoys me there's such like a difference in the design of like the loyalist and those guys. It's super annoying. And also that they're not coming out with like updates to all the like the stat lines, despite there being common units. I mean, it just bothers me. I don't know why they did that. Anyway, it doesn't. It's not symmetrical, and that, you know, just from an aesthetic point of view, I don't enjoy that at all.
It also puts everyone who's not currently got that buff, like from as my understanding, or some of the stuff I read through the other day, and also just reading through the Deathwatch Codex, for instance, which is an absolute pain to do. You know, there's a lot of damage too out there in the world, right? Like a lot of damage too. And I know that means you're just overkilling those one wound models, and even if they get an extra wound, it doesn't really help them. But I feel like there's something to be said for the have-nots really being the have-nots at the moment. I'm hype. Like, actually, the two wound death, Plague Marines doesn't seem like it's a massive deal when you're looking at heavy intercessors existing. You know, like that toughness five, 3 wounds is now a thing, but you know, go on,
keep going, finish your thought before I correct you and then find out I wasn't correcting anything. So
okay. Well, no,
he's gonna just dunk on you.
That's okay, I don't mind. That's what I just mean the fact that, you know, the Marines now have got like pretty much everything better, right? You've got toughness 5, you've got 3 wounds as opposed to 2 wounds. Yeah, they don't have discussion resilience, but you've got like psychic barrier, what the fuck it's called, and you've got you know, in Death Watch, you've got an artifact that just gives you a 5-up invuln, ignoring, like, DPRs and stuff. So, I don't know, like, I feel like some of the flavor necessarily might have been lost to a degree on the Chaos Marines versus the kind of, like, normal Marines. But, I don't know, like, whatever. I thought that Toughness 5 was really, like, a mainstay, really, for the Nurgle dudes. And now it's like, cool, what's your thing going to be now? Because if it's not resilience, what's your thing?
Yeah, but it's T5 on a non-40-point model or 30-point model.
I mean, it is. The Plague Marines are like 31 points right now.
Son of a bitch.
So I guess this is what I would say. We don't know if Disgusting Resilience stays. It seems like they're getting two different rules. They didn't mention DR at all in the article. It was Remorseless and, I can't remember, potato contagions or something, like Irish potato famine. But what they do get, if they keep it, is silly. The math on killing a Plague Marine that has access to a 4+ Feel No Pain and rerolling ones and twos with 2 wounds is absurd. It is way harder to kill than anything Space Marines can put together, even with Death Watch shenanigans afoot. And you would essentially have access to that on your entire army versus a bubble for Death Watch. So I don't think Disgusting Resilient is staying. It will just depend on what they replace it with to see like where that power level goes. Because otherwise, like, you're just never killing Plague Marines ever again in any game. You're just not going to be able to do it.
Which I'm quite excited about.
I bet you I know something that could do
it. Is it some heavy intercessors?
No, his custom stomper.
It's a custom stomper, Rob. Where have you been?
I'm sorry. I'm still fairly new to this. There was that 4-month block of you being like, and now I'm painting up more of my heavy my intercessors or whatever you got. You know, post Indomitus, you were very Marine excited.
No, I bought my Marine Army pre-LVO? Post-LVO? I can't remember. It was somewhere pre-LVO. Just around COVID. No, actually, I bought a bunch of Grey Knights at LVO. Remember, my suitcase was just crammed with.
That's what you brought with you, yeah. But didn't you buy those Raptors before LVO?
Maybe just before.
No, you might be right. Anyway.
Thank you, dude, because I had to explain to you what Leah Sisodon did. You would have known after OVO, so.
Oh, Liash. No, I loved Liash in 7th. Liash?
You liked him. I just had to tell you what his 8th edition rules were.
Yeah, it's possible. I won't deny it. You've told me a lot of things.
I'm excited personally. Very, 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 very excited. Especially because they seem to have made some like pretty positive changes with how in depth some of the codex is, not the lore, obviously, but some of the codexes are for story. So I'm hyped for Death Guard, sub factions, Death Guard, psychic poetry.
Is that a thing?
They already got that in Psychic Awakening, didn't they? But like,
the Plague Companies.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Shit. We're not talking about Batman anymore, are we?
No. But that'll be like rounded off. I'm excited. And also it's also the first look into like chaos. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just really excited about it personally.
I'm glad you are. I was so disappointed with the Blood Angel Codex leak. Thank you. Thank you for being excited for this game
Why were you disappointed? Because they lost a lot, right? They lost the 3d6 charge. They lost Wings.
They just lost the tricks. I think that's the problem. I think it's a good codex because it's Space Marines, but they're a freight train now. And every time I look at everything they do, it's one of those things where I'm like, this is good. Like, it's okay. You can play competitive Blood Angels, but then you look at what White Scars got and you say, White Scars do all of this already. But they just do it better in every way. Like, they have so many more tricks. It's just, why don't I just play red White Scars at this point? Because just not feeling it. I'm trying. I like the Sanguinor. He's cute. They finally made Dante playable, which is the first time in forever. So that felt really good. But I'm having a hard time.
What about Nipple Boys? Fucking Golden Gods.
They look great. I have 20, I think, very well painted Nipple Boys. And they're very cost efficient, but they're kind of boring. Like, the army is, there's not a lot of tricks, I guess. And that's, I like tricks. Descent of Angels just giving like basically +1 to hit is real boring. Upon Wings of Fire being a full turn before you come back in a 5-round game makes it very, very limiting. There's a bunch that makes me sad.
So that's what I remember when we were deploying last night. I remember being like, man, he's gonna be like all over me. And then I was like, so like you can get like across the board, right? And he was like, nope, just 12 inches plus charge.
Yeah. Plus a normal 2d6 charge.
Like,
as well.
Blood Angels could just mother F you from a friggin' 8th edition deployment zone.
I think Death Company can be like super fast and aggressive, but like the game you go second, you're like, well, I guess this was a good game. But if you go first with Death Company, you can have your entire army charge turn one if you have the CP for it, which is cute. But that's about it.
Do you not think there's I wonder if you've got more options. Obviously, I feel like a lot of the Blood Angel stuff is jump pack focused. So that is there not some advantage to the terrain being more competent, being able to jump between buildings, sort of a situation? I
guess we'll find out in turn two.
So far in my game against Val, using a very beautiful WTC map, I've been able to mostly hide my entire army for him, so he's had to come to me. But that's eventually going to change, and we'll just have to see what happens. I'm not upset. I'm kind of exaggerating because I'm sleep deprived. I was just kind of I just wanted something cute because I like playing like an army that has options all the time, and I just find I'm not very fast anymore. I think it was Brian Poland on Tabletop Titan when they did their game. He was like, yeah, like this used to be the jump pack faction, but now they don't get any bonuses to make them like faster than anybody else. They're still good because they hit like a truck. But like you can play Raven Guard this exact same way and have more tricks. You can play White Scars and have a million more tricks. So
that is one of the risks, I think, with the core and supplement approach is that you get the genericization. 40k chapters, and like it is hard to make the 4 or 5 close combat focused chapters
particularly distinct from one another.
But don't you then? I've spoken about this a bit with Age of Sigmar as well. Like, because they put the points too cheap on the Seraphon book, but ignoring that, they actually did quite a good job of like being able to like differentiate like different builds. Like you got like significant bonuses to particular units in the sub factions, and I wouldn't mind to see the kind of like, you know, Blood Angels specifically, like you say, bonus like to the jump pack sort of units, which make more sense than I think anything else. And then there maybe even be some sub factions or some other additional rules you could take, like for Blood Angels to then differentiate between those. Like, you know, all jump packs are a little bit better in Blood Angels, and then like Sanguinary Guard are particularly good in this. But you know, like there being a cost reward benefit, so you can take X but you can't take Y or whatever the situation. Like I feel there's too much customization. Like they give you additional rules on top to keep customizing the core thing that's good. So they're like, this thing's good, add rules, add more rules, add more rules. That thing is still good, you've just added three layers of rules onto that without taking anything away. And I think that's like, maybe that's just
you hit it.
You
hit it. I think that the thing with this this Space Marine Codex that we're finding, the new one, is that everything is so generic, and there are specific units that are just so efficient that there's no reason to take anything else. So most armies are like, I'm going to take Inceptors because they're just good. They kill everything super good. I'm going to take Blade Guard Veterans because they're just good. And I'm going to take Vanguard Veterans. And I think maybe Vanguard Veterans is the real reason why Blood Angels are so boring to me, is because like they are so good, Vanguard Vets. And everybody can take them, and they like so when everybody has like a really strong jump pack unit, you're like, well, my strong jump pack unit, what about them?
Yeah.
I guess, right? So anyway,
I think it's super fair. I think it's fair. I can understand your disappointment. I hope that doesn't work. I mean, it'd be weird if I was thinking this. It'd be weird if the Death Guard book comes out and it's only the plague engines that are good. Like, or the demon engines, like, they're the only bits that are good. And, like, they don't do anything to the Marines, for instance, and, you know, or, like, the Terminators, and you're like, oh, okay. So it becomes, like, a vehicle army would be weird, right? But, you know, they probably will be strong, but, like, it'd be weird if they're, the core focus. I think that would be, it would seem, like, incongruent with what's going on with the rest of the...
Incongruent.
I'm proud of myself for use of incongruent.
Excuse me.
I think,
but I will say, I do love Sanguinor. There, if you like the big shining light for me, Sanguinor and the Angel Sacrifice stratagem are super cute. It's like the one trick that I like so far in this book.
Question.
Oh, and the Death Company captain
is super upset. Do you think point changes will fix it, or do you think it's only rules changes that will like fix it?
Okay, go Val.
Go.
Because I think I can handle this one. I think point changes would fix it, because it's an efficiency problem.
Yeah.
So if the units are too efficient, it's not the fact that they have wicked rules, but the problem is it's always on a knife's edge, like how you make something less efficient without killing it. Usually it kills it, especially in something like the Marine Codex, because ultimately like the water is just going to flow downhill, right? So like, if you make Inceptors less efficient, then everything's just going to look like, okay, well, what does something that... Like, there's probably, like, four other units that compete with Inceptors for a similar role, right? So, like, maybe it becomes Gladiator Tanks or, you know, whatever. Like, there's going to be shit that can output that damage.
I was talking to somebody last night about this.
For instance.
And I said, I think if they nerfed Inceptors, most Space Marine armies just wouldn't be good.
Oh, really?
Like, I don't even know if they would stay super top tier if they nerfed Inceptors, because Inceptors are that good that I think they make certain lists top tier, and that's the only reason why.
Oh, wow, that's pretty strong. What
about like a grab, like a fucking Devastator and a drop pod or some bullshit like that? Like, I mean, there's just lots of other ways to get something similar, same but different, right?
Mm-mm. No, not at all, not at all.
All right, lay it on me. Why should I be afraid of the Inceptors that I allowed you to put in Deep Strike after deployment startup?
Well, you didn't. I played them on the board. I mean, I was going to spend a CP to put them back into Deep Strike because I could, but...
Wait, they're on the board? Where are they?
They're hiding with my my Vanguard Vets, so that when you make the mistake of charging...
They're in the Vanguard Vet mashup?
Oh, yeah. Shit. I didn't know that that's where they were. Okay.
But,
good stuff.
Like 2d3 plasma shots each at 50 points that you really don't have any fear of overcharging with blast. So, like, if your orc boys, for example, decided to not get engaged in combat, just five guys is putting out 30 shots that are, for Blood Angels, probably hitting on twos, re-rolling.
Yeah, the unit's gone.
Yeah, and you can just overcharge. So, you know, strength 8, AP 3, 2 damage, kill is good at killing practically everything in the game except Dreadnoughts, and that's only because of Duty Eternal. So,
and Custom Stompers.
It's going to do a lot to Custom Stomper, though, right? It's going to be, what's it going to be? It's 5, it's 4 per model,
30 strength
shots.
8 hits.
Well, it's not 30, because it won't be blast against the Stomper. So you can... Oh,
right.
You can average 20.
20
basically.
Hits.
Yeah.
Say 19 hits. Half of those wound. I save a third of them. You get 6 through.
18. Yeah, so you take 12 damage.
12 damage.
And that's from a 30 points.
Yeah, and now the Custom Stomper can see them. Good night.
Or can he? Or can he? What,
can you fire and fade?
No, but I can charge you and do mortal wounds on the charge. Because why not? Live the dream.
My whole plan with the Custom Stompa is just a rage boner fantasy where you shoot me, you don't kill me, and then the Custom Stompa murders your life.
Well, lucky for you, I only have 2 shooting units in this army.
Oh, can't wait.
Oh, all right, listen, it's getting late, and I want Pete to be able to sleep.
Yeah, Pete's been doing some pretty conspicuous yawning, I'm noticing.
Yeah. Wow, and some full sleeps at certain points. Thanks very much to both of you today, and sorry for needing to cover me, but I appreciate
your
deep dive into the Batman franchise.
Yeah, we didn't even get that deep. I wanted to go so deep.
Really? Who's your favorite Batman villain?
Batman villain?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I never really thought about it. I mean, the easy answer is usually the Joker, because he's iconic.
I'm going to go with Vito.
Danny DeVito, I mean, in general, is a good person. I'm into that. Maybe he's not a good person. I don't know him in real life.
I think he is a super good person.
Maybe. Yeah. Hopefully. Cross fingers.
I hope he's not a...
He does not play... Right. He's not when he's Frank in Always Sunny, but that's a whole different kind of thing.
I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I probably like the Riddler. I think I like the Riddler. I think that's an interesting concept when it's not Jim Carrey. Maybe
the Riddler?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Another... unfinished thread from the most recent Batman series is they never really went back to the Riddler. They set him up in Batman Begins, and then they never go back to him, do they?
Nope.
Yeah,
Christopher Nolan was like, I would rather make a mediocre third movie.
Really, really bad movie.
I'm not alone on that.
I got in a fight about it, like, when I walked out of the theater. Not a fisticuffs fight, but, like, as we left, my buddies who had already seen it were like, wasn't that so great? Because we were comic book fans. And I was like, yeah, it was okay. Like, there's big plot holes. And they were like, no, there wasn't. I was like, the opening scene when he, like, takes off on the motorbike. Like, any police officer could have just, like, pushed it over with their hand. And, like, the movie's just over. Could you just imagine? He's, like, driving through that barricade, and one cop was just like, boop. And it's, like, it wasn't going that fast. Like, it wasn't like he was going 200 miles an hour. He was going, like, 30. Like, just shoulder tackle the dude. Game over, man. Like, come on. Anyway.
It's one of those movies that I just don't have any real distinct memories of, except for maybe, I don't know, the football stadium blowing up. Maybe.
Yeah, just.
So the issue for me is that, like, so Bane is set up as the ideological counterpoint of Batman. Like, that's the whole premise of who he is. Like, in order to defeat Bane, he needs to overcome the ideology of Bane. But what he does instead is he shoots him with a motorbike. That just doesn't feel like the way to win. Like that particular setup. But, you know.
Also, can I just point out, like, I don't know if anyone remembers the original books where Bane came and, like where it was, you know, it's when they killed Superman, it's mid-90s, and, like, Bane shows up and he gets replaced by, like, an even more morally bankrupt version of Batman who's, like, futuristic with, like, wicked weapons and stuff, Azrael.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a really cool story arc. Like, Batman's also aging out and he's, like, he's kind of shitty and he gets his back broken. And this is just like a really neat story arc that they could have just done and yep. they didn't do it.
Bane in that was very interesting, right? Because they played him off as being like hyper intelligent because he wasn't just a strong man. They play it off as like a lot of people underestimate him because they think he's just a big dumb goon, but he's yeah. like a master strategist on top of everything else, which mm-hmm. they kind of put into the movie, but you don't get the rest.
All right. Well, I think Rob was trying to go Marvel at his fridge and the fact that he doesn't have to spice all of his food heavily and yeah. dry it and
it's just
keep
the
it
milk.
In barrels.
It's just the milk. I've been keeping the milk in the bathroom because it hasn't got all the windows, and it's keeping it cooler has been my mm-hmm. general like tactic for now. It's just
hey,
it's
love, just buy bagged milk. Go the bagged milk route.
I live. If you've never seen Oliver, I live basically in the flat that Fagin lives in.
Do you guys even have bagged milk in Britain? I don't.
That's in Ontario. Does it extend further east than Ontario?
Yeah, it's an East Coast Maritime thing. It's 100% like Ontario and the Maritimes.
What
bagged
the fuck
milk.
Is a bagged milk?
It's a milk. It's a bag. Milk? It's a bag full of milk.
Bud, you gotta go watch a Google yourself a bag of Homo milk, bud.
Yeah. It's not even just a Canadian thing. People think it is. There's a bunch of countries that do it, but we get the brunt because we're the ones that people would be like, why would you even do that? These other places we assume just are backwards, we're like, no, we love it too.
I actually literally just watched a good 10-minute YouTube video on an indignant Canadian YouTuber from the West refuting the idea that all Canadians drink milk from bags. Because apparently that ends in Ontario. Once you're in Manitoba, it no longer is. But before we sign up, I just want to say a couple thank yous. I want to say thank you, India. Thank you, Terror. Thank you, Disillusionment. Thank you, Frailty. Thank you, Consequence. But most of all, thank you. Thank you. Silence!
I like it. I see what you did there. That was, who was that? Was that, what song was that from?
That's the song Thank You by Alanis Morissette. It's called The Callback.
I thought it was ELO.
Isn't it ironic? And by the way, guys, here's one last Alanis Morissette fact for everyone at home. The song Ironic is in itself meta because the song itself is ironic because none of the things she says is in fact ironic.
No, they're just really uncomfortable truths. For a person at a given time in their life.
Do you see what she did there?
She's a genius. She's a genius. I got nothing else to say apart from thanks to everyone for joining us live. Thank you to everyone on the social game Patreon. Thank you to everyone on the podcast. Please stay hydrated. And thank you to Games Workshop for letting Val and Peter on the show. I stole that off Nick in the chat. That's a great gag.
It's a good bet. Yeah, no problem, Nick. I'll just have to use your energy next time I'm on the show. I can't wait to talk about
shout outs before we head out.
To talk about Necrons next week on Thursday.
Yeah, Necrons are very fun to play.
I was painting this stuff, and I don't like Games Workshop very much, but I spend my life talking about it.
I found that if I take my airbrush and I just give it a little flick, it just gives a nice glow effect.
Ah.